Good evening. It was a day that Americans believed they would never forget, and their president had the right words for it.
December 7th, 1941, a date which will live in infamy.
We talk about the Pacific War with a Marine veteran. And the borough president of Brooklyn plans to sleep on the streets tonight, as so many homeless people do every night in New York City. With these and other stories, I'm Paul DiRienzo with the news for Saturday, December 7th, 2019. Democrats in the United States House of Representatives met behind closed doors on Saturday to prepare for what could be the final week of their months-old impeachment inquiry that has imperiled Donald Trump's presidency. The House Judiciary Committee Democratic lawmakers were working through the weekend to sift through evidence against the Republican president and draft formal charges known as articles of impeachment that the panel could recommend for a full House vote as early as Thursday. The lawmakers released a 55-page report on Saturday morning outlining what they see as the constitutional grounds on which articles of impeachment could be built. In releasing the report, the panel's Democratic chairman, Gerald Nadler, said impeachment was the only way to hold the Republican president to account. The committee will hold a public hearing on Monday to consider evidence gathered in the inquiry. WBAI will broadcast the hearing live beginning Monday at 9 a.m. And the United States and Iran each freed a prisoner on Saturday in a rare act of cooperation between two longtime foes whose ties have worsened since President Donald Trump took office. Iran released Ziwa Wang, a U.S. citizen who had been held for 3 years on spying charges, while the United States freed Iranian Masoud Soleimani, who had been facing charges of violating U.S. sanctions against Tehran. Trump thanked Iran on Twitter for what he called a very fair negotiation that led to the exchange. He said the swap showed the United States and Iran can make a deal together. And Second Lieutenant Mohammed Saeed al-Shamrani, the Saudi airman accused of killing 3 people at a U.S. Navy base in Florida, appeared to have posted criticism of U.S. wars and quoted slain al-Qaeda leader Osama bin Laden on social media hours before the shooting spree. Federal investigators have not disclosed any motive behind the attack, which unfolded at dawn on Friday when the Saudi national is said to have begun firing a handgun inside a classroom at the Naval Air Station in Pensacola. Al-Shamrani reportedly referred to U.S. wars in the Middle East, writing that he hated the American people for committing crimes not only against Muslims, but also humanity. And 78 years ago today, the Japanese Imperial Navy attacked the U.S. military air base at Pearl Harbor, Hawaii, beginning at 7:48 on a Sunday morning. 353 bombers led the assault in 2 waves, damaging 8 U.S. battleships, killing 2,403 Americans and wounding 1,178 others. The next day, both countries declared war, marking the entry of the United States into the already raging Second World War. Here is a broadcast describing the attack from Hawaii that was broadcast on NBC News at the time.
Hello, NBC. This is KGU in Honolulu, Hawaii. I am speaking from the roof of the Advertiser Publishing Company building. We have witnessed this morning a distant view, a great battle off Pearl Harbor, and a severe bombing of Pearl Harbor by enemy planes. Undoubtedly Japanese. The city of Honolulu has also been attacked and considerable damage done. This battle has been going on for nearly 3 hours. One of the bombs dropped within 50 feet of KGU Tower. It is no joke. It is a real war. Public of Honolulu have been advised to keep in their homes and await results.
President Franklin Delano Roosevelt addressed the joint session of Congress the next day in one of the most famous speeches in American history.
Mr. Speaker, members of the Senate, of the House of Representatives, yesterday, December 7th, 1941, a date which will live in infamy. The United States of America was suddenly and deliberately attacked by naval and air forces of the Empire of Japan. The United States was at peace with that nation, and at solicitation of Japan, still in conversation with its government and its emperor, looking toward the maintenance of peace in the Pacific. Indeed, 1 hour after Japanese air squadrons had commenced bombing in the American island of Oahu, the Japanese ambassador to the United States and his colleague delivered to our Secretary of State a formal reply to a recent American message. And while this reply stated that it seemed useless to continue the existing diplomatic negotiations, it contained no threat or hint of war or of armed attack. It will be recorded that the distance of Hawaii from Japan makes it obvious that the attack was deliberately planned many days or even weeks ago. During the intervening time, the Japanese government has deliberately sought to deceive the United States by false statements and expressions of hope for continued peace. The attack yesterday on the Hawaiian Islands has caused severe damage to American naval and military forces. I regret to tell you that very many American lives have been lost. In addition, American ships have been reported torpedoed on the high seas between San Francisco and Honolulu.
In the following clips, many racist terms for the Japanese people are used. They are artifacts of the time. The Japanese and American navies went toe-to-toe in May 1942 in the Battle of the Coral Sea near Australia. The battle began a bloody island-by-island fight that eventually led to the shores of Japan.
Directly to the east of Darwin, off the northern coast of Australia, lies the Coral Sea. It is here for the first time in this war that the American and Japanese navies come to grips in a major action. In the very center of the Coral Sea, the two task forces meet in mortal struggle. Aircraft carriers, heavy cruisers, light cruisers, destroyers and gunboats fill the sea. While airplanes drone their way into the skies.
But it was another Hawaiian island, the distant speck of land halfway across the Pacific Ocean known as Midway, where the turning point of the war occurred.
Hardly had the din of guns been hushed in the Coral Sea when the Battle of Midway blazed forth in all its mighty fury. Here the United States forces met and crushed a full Jap battle fleet. By sheer weight of numbers, the Japs hoped to overwhelm and conquer our mid-Pacific fighting forces. The Japs had carefully planned this sneak attack. They gambled all and lost. The Battle of Midway, the Japs hoped, would be their stepping stone to Pearl Harbor, Australia, Alaska, and eventually, the United States mainland. Here the Japs received a mortal wound. Here our defenders were ready. First in the air were our Marine Corps fighters, then our Army flyers, and finally, our fighting Navy, all working in complete unity and concentrating relentlessly and successfully upon the common enemy.
But it would be many tough fights before the end of the war came into sight. One of the largest was the six-week-long battle on Guadalcanal, a small island held by the Japanese.
Those are regular army troops landing on a Guadalcanal beach to relieve the Marines who made such a successful blitz on the Japanese. Since this picture was taken, in fact, the Japanese have been eliminated from the island thanks to the superb work done by these men, now leaving with their trophies. Among the veterans of Guadalcanal were these two, Colonel Carlson and his son. The Marines took their Japanese prisoners with them when they left. And here, Brigadier General Rupertus of the Marines says goodbye, and Major General Patch of the Army takes over. The Marines, who made the original landing, seized the airfield, and held on against all counterattacks, have certainly deserved the rest and recuperation now coming their way. It was their victory that finally put the Japs into reverse in the Solomons.
But it would be with the even larger and more destructive Battle of Okinawa and Iwo Jima, the U.S. military faced the possible invasion of Japan. FDR died in 1945. His vice president, Harry Truman, took the reins, and in August 1945, he spoke to the American people.
A short time ago, an American airplane dropped one bomb on Hiroshima and destroyed its usefulness to the enemy. That bomb has more power than 20,000 tons of TNT. The Japanese began the war from the air at Pearl Harbor. They have been repaid manyfold, and the end is not yet. With this bomb, we have now added a new and revolutionary increase in destruction to supplement the growing power of our armed forces. In their present form, these bombs are now in production, and even more powerful forms are in development. It is an atomic bomb. It is a harnessing of the basic power of the universe. The force from which the sun draws its power has been loosed against those who brought war to the Far East.
Subsequent studies have determined the atomic attacks on Hiroshima and Nagasaki killed over 200,000 people when counting in radiation deaths that plagued the surviving residents with cancers for many years following the atomic bombing. The U.S. military under General Douglas MacArthur occupied Japan until 1952. Untold millions died in the Pacific theater of World War II. Known numbers include nearly 25 million in China, 2 million Japanese, and about 150,000 Americans. A United States Marine veteran, Matthew Ho, is senior fellow at the Center for International Policy. Ho is the author of Authorizations for Madness, The Effects and Consequences of Congress's Endless Permissions for War. It's available at the news blog Counterpunch. He says World War II didn't start on December 7th, but had been years in the making.
Certainly that war had been going on, at least in the Pacific, for a decade before, because China invades Manchuria in northern China, Manchuria, in 1931. For 10 years, up until a few months before the Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor, the United States is providing the steel and the oil to the Japanese that allows them for a decade to slaughter literally tens of millions of Chinese, as well as keep their occupation of Korea. Certainly, December 7th, just like September 11th, was not the day the war started. It certainly was the day the war came home to America, so to speak.
Do you see some parallels? The U.S. is using these sanctions against all these countries and happily pushing them from Iran to China and Russia, pushing these potentially enemy countries into the similar circumstances they did Japan right before the war, basically pushing them into economic collapse and starvation. Do you think this is sort of like almost asking for trouble?
I think so, in the sense of you make someone desperate. You make any living being desperate, and they are going to lash out. You starve a dog, and it will lash out. It will lose all its domestication and seek survival. And you do the same with a nation or a people. You starve them. You take away what they need to survive via their hospitals, via their infrastructure, and people will become desperate. And with sanctions, too, you don't ever see the results coming out of sanctions that the American government says will. What you see, rather than people turning against their government, is actually people supporting the government more or at least oppose it in the United States more. The sanctions certainly work in making people suffer, but they don't have that strategic end result that the United States consistently says it will in terms of the people rising up and overthrowing a government. All it does is make the people suffer.
But it does stir up the deplorables who sort of just want to, they sort of seem to be motivated by an angry need to see the enemy suffer in the way that only America can make them suffer. It's a strange thing that Trump plays up to.
They do. They like it. I mean, certainly look at what happened, say, with the pardoning of those war criminals, the Chief Gallagher and the soldiers. That totally was geared towards Trump's base. Those men went over there and did what they had to do to those savages. That's kind of the attitude of it. So absolutely, it stirs up his people. And I think it stirs up just that ugly base tribalism within people, and particularly when people are scared or things aren't going well or you're working two jobs or whatever. You got to have some enemy.
Ho says these endless wars will continue until the public sees through the lies and justifications for combat that have been used to stir up war fever for thousands of years.
Go back 2,000 years, and I'm sure the Romans were saying the same thing to their people and to their legions. Just one more war against the barbarians in Scotland or the barbarians in Germany, and this thing will be over. I think it gives purpose to the wars. It gives a sense of meaning, and it provides hope for some finality that, like, okay, if this will be different than previous wars, this is unlike other conflicts. And you see parallels to that in many other things. Certainly every time there's a depression or every time there's a stock market crash, some kind of recession, we're always told that leading up to that event, leading up to the bubble bursting, right, we're always told by economists and Wall Street bankers, the Federal Reserve, politicians, whoever, that the economy, what we're seeing now is unlike any other economy before, and you can't look back to previous examples. And then, of course, the same thing happens. And we see that in warfare, too. We're told World War I's the war to end all wars. With the atomic age, there won't be wars like there were before. The Gulf War was going to bring about a new world order. And then, of course, going into Afghanistan was going to end the war on terror. So what we see, though, is that just as these wars are no different in their brutality, in the suffering, in the unexpected consequences that they always bring, so too the propaganda and the public relations campaigns that go along with these wars to prolong them are no different than those that were done in previous wars.
Is there any sign of hope? I mean, is this something that's part of human nature that we can never get past, or is this an era of history that could be undone?
You like to think that we are evolving as a species. However, you look and you see what we choose to do, what we prioritize as a nation, in the sense of whether it be continuing to purchase weapons of mass destruction, whether it be they be in the last year, the United States Air Force has come up with new cruise missiles and new bombers. The Navy is coming up with new submarines, all of which by themselves can end the world as we know it within the span of an hour, down to the micro level, where we are a nation that has more guns than people. You want to be hopeful, and you want to think that we're getting better, we're evolving, but certainly our priorities, in determined as by what we spend our money on and what we produce, don't seem to show that.
A United States Marine veteran, Matthew Ho, is senior fellow at the Center for International Policy. Ho is the author of Authorizations for Madness, The Effects and Consequences of Congress's Endless Permissions for War. It's available at the news blog Counterpunch. And you're listening to the news on WBAI in New York. I'm Paul DiRienzo. We were going to run an interview in a few moments, but if that person does not call in, we'll take your calls at 212-209-2877. First this, Attorney General Letitia James, leading a coalition of nine attorneys general, filed a legal brief on Friday arguing that the Trump administration's Environmental Protection Agency is violating federal law. The legal argument maintains by continuing to allow chlorpyrifos, a widely used pesticide, the EPA is endangering infants and young children's neurological development with contaminated food. The filing is part of a lawsuit in the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Ninth Circuit by the Attorneys General of New York, California, Washington, Massachusetts, Maryland, and Vermont. The Attorneys General of Hawaii, Oregon, and the District of Columbia subsequently joined the coalition suit. The suit claims chlorpyrifos, a widely used pesticide on food crops, including many fruits and vegetables commonly consumed by infants, young children, and pregnant women, is well documented to harm proper development and functioning of the central nervous system and brain. The suit argues then EPA Administrator Scott Pruitt disregarded those dangers in allowing the use of the pesticides. Attorney General James says studies show children born to women exposed to chlorpyrifos during pregnancy had a variety of disorders, including delayed motor development, attention problems, pervasive developmental disorder, attention deficit disorder, autism spectrum disorder, and reduced IQ scores. And here in the city, in Brooklyn, Borough President Eric Adams will be joining the world's big sleep out. It's a global moment aiming to raise money and awareness about homelessness by hosting a sleep out on the Brooklyn Borough Hall steps. Adams will be joined by local Brooklynites. The proceeds raised from the New York Sleep Out will go towards local charities such as Robin Hood, Breaking Ground, the Ali Forney Center, and the Coalition for the Homeless. According to activists, nearly 4,000 people sleep on the streets and the subways of New York each night. About 500,000 people in the United States are homeless. It's estimated that worldwide, 1.6 billion people are homeless. About 20% of the world's population are without homes. And we have a few minutes, and we want to use that opportunity to ask for the support of the people of New York and the region around the signal of WBAI. I think it reaches out a good 50 miles beyond New York City. I've heard the signal driving in from the Delaware Water Gap out in western New Jersey. I've heard the signal down along the Jersey Shore and out as far as Connecticut and on Long Island out through Nassau into Suffolk County. So we know that within the listening range of New York are tens of millions of people. And we here at WBAI, we have what has been quite an unusual way of raising support. It's really depending on you, the listeners, to pay in advance or even after, not even in advance, but after you receive the information. I mean, I've just given you all this information. You've received this and you receive it every night from the news and all the other programs. And then after you get it, we ask you for your support, which is a very unusual way of supporting a institution. Usually they make you pay beforehand. Very few things allow you to pay after you get the service or the product. And the reason we have this system is because Pacifica Radio was founded on the idea of the listener. It was founded on the idea of a news source and an information source that would not be beholden to the powers that be. And that is the fact. WBAI is poor because we are not beholden to corporate sponsorship. We are not beholden to advertising. We're not beholden to government grants, as so many other stations are, even the ones that nominally say they're listener sponsored. In fact, they get millions and millions of dollars in funding from the government and other sources. And you can see it in the tone of their productions and the tone of their work that they produce. It never strays too far from hoeing the middle line. But here at WBAI, we know that in pursuit of the truth, you can't hoe a middle line. There isn't a middle line on the truth. It's either truth or false. Those gray areas, well, we'll discuss those gray areas because gray areas definitely do exist. But for the most part, in war and peace, death and destruction, in poor and rich, in the relationships of people, we know that exploitation of the workers, exploitation of the poor, racial discrimination, ethnic discrimination, they all, religious discrimination, it's all out there. And we don't like to take the middle path when we discuss those kind of things here at WBAI. There is no middle path on racism. There is no gray area in issues of imperialism and war and peace and conquest and murder, things along those lines, torture camps, as the U.S. has been running, and the spying and lack of privacy and the millions and million billions of conversations, the so-called metadata being kept in vaults and used by police agencies to take away our freedoms of speech that were you know, because what freedom of speech is there when you're afraid to speak, right? Because the government's listening in or knows everybody who can find everything that's going on. So WBAI, in trying to but to deal with the truth no matter where it takes us, which is sort of my mantra here at the news, we have to rely on you after you get the information to validate it afterwards by calling our pledge line and becoming a member and part of WBAI family. All right. So now I've given you the rationale. And let me give you the number. 516-620-3602. That's our pledge line. 516-620-3602. Or you can go on the internet to the give2wbai.org, give2wbai.org. Or you can send a check to Pacifica-WBAI. Let me get that right. Pacifica-WBAI. That's what you should write on pay to the order of. Pacifica-WBAI. Then you can address your envelope the same way, Pacifica-WBAI. And you can send it to 388 Atlantic Avenue, Brooklyn, New York, 11217. So our pledge line again is 516-620-3602. Give to WBAI.org or checks payable to Pacifica-WBAI and mail it to Pacifica-WBAI, 388 Atlantic Avenue, Brooklyn, New York, 11217. All right. So, you know, there's very little you're going to hear. Only nobody is going to be critical except WBAI is going to offer a critique to World War II, right? We offer you a critique of that you might not hear, because it's, oh, they bombed us on Pearl Harbor December 7th. It was a day of infamy and we launched a massive war and it was a glorious victory in a mushroom cloud. You know, yeah, I've had, you know, many people nod their head and say that's exactly how they see it. But it's more complicated than that, you know, because was the United States really out there because it wanted to save the poor Chinese peasants who were being murdered by the imperialist army of Japan at that time? Or were we just trying to replace one imperialist overlord with another and use our atomic bomb to do that? Only, I'm telling you that you will only hear that analysis over the airwaves on WBAI, right? You will only hear that. It is not so simple a question. We don't just say, support the troops. Of course we support the troops, but we don't thank them necessarily for their service when that service involves murdering civilians or peasants or expanding empire. That's not a reason to support the troops. We want to pull the troops back. We want the troops to be home. We don't want them to be fighting. We want the troops and all that money spent on what's necessary to be spent right here at home. And you know what? Not just right here at home. Right? Because we owe a debt. When you're the richest country in the world, you owe a debt to the rest of the world, our brothers and our sisters all over the world. And you owe a debt to WBAI for having this information. WBAI is calling 516-620-3602. Pledge 516-620-3602. Become a member of WBAI or go to give2wbai.org or mail a check to Pacifica-WBAI, 388 Atlantic Avenue, Brooklyn, New York, 11217. Mention you doing it to support the WBAI news. My name is Paul DiRienzo. This has been the WBAI news.
Again, don't know where, don't know when, but I know we'll meet again some sunny day.
And that's some of the news for Saturday, December 7th, 2019. The news was produced with Linda Perry. Our engineer is James Ursay. From the studios of the listener-sponsored, locally produced, and independent WBAI News, I'm Paul DiRienzo.
Coming up momentarily, On Contact with Chris Hedges.
To the folks that I know, tell them I won't be long. They'll be happy to know.